Hey guys, I absolutely love that you're checking out and listening to the podcast. And I only have one ask quickly, and that would be if you could please share this podcast with somebody else that you maybe know that is going through the system or struggling to navigate it from the youth soccer perspective. And that would mean the absolute world to me because, as you know, I don't sell anything through the podcast and I don't have any sponsorships. And the more people that I can help, that is my overall objective. So I would absolutely love if you could share this with somebody. Take the 5 seconds to do so by sending it through social media or WhatsApp or whatever way that you like to share content, and I will make sure that I continue to deliver valuable and insightful content for you. Ladies and gentlemen, I am back with the Obsession Beast Parent Education Level 1 course, class number 2. And with this class, we're going to be looking at and discussing essentially the realities of 7v7 and 9v9 that follow the mantra and the model of U.S. youth soccer. Now, moving into the actual premise of what we're going to be discussing in this class, the first question you should see on your screen is, are you opposed to young players getting more of the following 8 ideas? And these 8 ideas are basic, and they fit perfectly in line with, in my opinion, of what kids at this age group, which would be like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12-year-olds, want to do when they play the game of football. And without further ado, let's jump into what that's going to look like and what we should be demanding of them. So the first one is having more fun. Kids at this age range, like I said, 7 to 12, they want to have fun and they want to have a lot of fun. So like you can see the picture that I chose here is Cristiano Ronaldo doing his Sue celebration. Like, we'll discuss more about it in a second. But the point is, kids want to have fun and enjoy, right? Second one would be more touches on the ball. I think we can all kind of agree that having more touches on the ball is important and a benefit to kids playing the game. That means they have to make more decisions. They have more options and more choices that they have to be involved in as part of the decision-making process. And that obviously reflects on having more touches on the ball. Now, next one, the third option or third piece is playing multiple positions. And look, I know some people might say, well, you know, my son's a striker and he's a 9-year-old, or my son's a left wing and he's 10 years old. Your children, from my experience and expertise, if they are not a generational talent, which again is a 0.00001% player, should be playing a variety of positions to develop, get prepared, and learn. And of course, it's an experience. Now, I think we can all agree that scoring more goals, especially for young kids, that's what kids want to do. They want to emulate their favorite players. And typically, young kids' favorite players are guys that score goals. Okay? And then the next one, last one, is celebrating. And this is huge. If you look at the picture before with scoring more goals, you got Ronaldo again doing his celebration. Kids score goals. They want to emulate their favorite players when they score goals. Same concept. So they want to do the Mbappe. They want to do the Ronaldo. They want to do the Messi. They want to do whatever else celebration that's hot right now. That's what they want to be doing. And that's the reality of kids at this age group. And those are the 8 things. So I would assume, correct me if I'm wrong, that you would be okay with or not opposed to these 8 things that I just highlighted. Celebrating, scoring more goals, playing multiple positions, more touches on the ball, having more fun, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's actually a couple more things that's coming, but I just wanna make sure you guys understand, right? So far out of those things we just looked at, here's the next one. That you guys are so far okay with, right? Now we're moving to the next one, which is involved in all 4 phases of play. This is key and critical, right? So we look at this. They need to be involved in attacking. So that means the team has the ball. Transition to defending. That's what the next one is. So if you look at the arrows, so that means we've now lost the ball. We need to get our butt back to defense. And then there's actual defending. So the opponent has now controlled possession of the ball. There's no longer a transition. It's now full on defending. And then the final one would be transition to attack. The team is now regaining possession. And what happens a lot is kids that are involved in this at 77 and 99 typically get stuck playing a single position. So they get stuck playing defender. And then, or I should say, they get stuck playing striker. And they don't get the chance to play different positions, so they don't get to experience all 4 phases of play. So that's key. Next one is being better prepared for the next level. So what you see here is level up. Kids can level up by what's going to happen shortly, or what you'll see shortly. And that's just giving them the opportunity to be better prepared. I don't think you're going to be opposed to that. Next one would be falling in love with the game.
And you'll understand shortly why I put this year. This kind of ties back to having fun, scoring goals, celebrating. Kids at this age want to do those type of things. That's what we're trying to help them do. Now, next piece is, do you know why 77 is so difficult for the average youth American soccer player? And, you know, that is a very, very good question that we now have to discuss and answer. And if you want me to give the answer now, I will, which you probably do if you haven't thought about it yourself. But the average, I didn't say the top, I said the average youth American soccer player at 77 are relatively new to the game. They don't have a lot of skill. They don't have a lot of understanding of game-based concepts. They probably just came from recreational. And so they're just going to be missing core and fundamental skill to be successful playing 7 versus 7. Now, like I said, you're going to see that they're going to start soccer late. They're going to have limited time spent with the ball and limited time watching and seeing the game from their perspective, which means experience. And that leads to what I said earlier. They will not be prepared with the tools/skills necessary to play the game successfully. And this is key. And I actually have an entire class just talking about the skills necessary for kids to be successful at 77 and 99. And, you know, think of skills as tools. So let's frame this back to like kids going to school. When they go to school and they have to start reading, they don't read an entire book right away, do they? Of course not. They're going to read segments. They're going to read words first, really. They're going to read a letter. They're going to read a letter first. So that's why you learn the ABCs, A, B, C all the way through Z. And then they're going to start learning words. And then they're going to start learning phrases. Or maybe when I say phrases, I mean like two words. And then they'll start learning sentences. And then they'll start being able to get closer to actually reading. And it's the same thing in football. Kids need to have the tools to be successful to play the game. And that's not what happens because these kids, unfortunately, at 77, for 98% of the country, it's just a continuous cycle of not enough skill, not enough ability, not enough experience, game experience to be successful. And that's huge because if you don't have the tools, and again, thinking about the school reference I just gave you, is it realistic that I should expect a child that cannot even do ABC correctly and identify those words to be able to read a page or a book? And I think we can all come to an agreement that that would not be accurate, that I could expect that. That's why I'm saying the continuous cycle. We continue to have kids that are about 98% of the country that don't have the level, don't have the skill, they're new to the game, they don't have the experience about playing, and we're throwing them into environments that they're not ready for. And then you get parents at this age that are basically first-time soccer parents. So, you know, they've never played the game at a certain level, like above high school, because high school is not high level, in my opinion. Are there some high schools that are high level? Sure, you have residency programs that are high level, yes. But the average high school is not high level. So most parents have not played above high school, which means like college or professional. So they, again, are either new to the sport or first-time parents that maybe have some little knowledge of the game, and they're being thrown into this, and they don't know what to look for either. Hence the reason, the key thing about this course, okay? Now, these are kind of the effects that you're going to see for the 98% of kids that just don't have the level. So we're going to see here, kids with low or no skill, which I've already highlighted, pigeonholed to play one single position. This is where I talked about those four key phases of play: attacking, transition to defense, and transition to attack. They're going to be stuck playing defender, and they never get to play other positions to learn more. Or maybe they're just a goalie, for example. When they go to team practice, that's 80% scrimmages, which is obviously going to be a problem. And then you're going to see a lot of kick it, boot it, and send it, which I think we've already discussed, but those are the three most vile words in the game, which continues to promote American soccer and not football. And like I said a second ago, being pigeonholed, they're only going to play one side of the game, so they don't get all four elements. You're going to have parents screaming and joysticking their kids the entire time, which is only going to impact their long-term development and joy of the game, obviously. Like, if you think about when you work, do you want people screaming and or joysticking you to get your job done? I'm going to assume no, I don't. And the people that I have spoken to as well don't. So I'm sure you can imagine why kids wouldn't want it. And then the next piece would be the same thing about coaches. Coaches do the same thing on the sideline. Like, you'll hear coaches screaming, kick it, boot it, send it. You know, just going off on these kids. And there's way more to that, but I think you get the point. Next one would be, especially for 77, is what I call the boot ball line, which is actually known as the build-out line. But basically, this references, you know, most teams, again, 98% of the country, when they know that the build-out line is going to be there, they're going to line up three kids on that line, that the second they can then be released to go pressure, they'll send three guys to go pressure that ball. And when that happens, it's almost like a hot potato. So the guy that's going to be receiving, the defender that's going to be receiving the ball, says, hot potato, bam, smacks it out. So it becomes kickball, boot ball, send ball, whatever word you want to use to describe that, that's up to you. Now, last point would be players getting less than 50 touches in a game on the ball. So that means a touch would be control, pass. That's two touches. So if they're getting less than 50 touches on the ball, where do you expect them to actually get better? And like I said, this affects 98% of the country. And then what happens is clubs and parents love to use social media, hence the picture on the bottom right of the corner, where trophies become the most important thing, and kids unfortunately take the back seat. So what this means is kids, the players, the whole reason why they're even here in youth sports, are no longer the priority of this. It's now trophies for parents to go on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or Twitter or whatever platform they're using to post their kids' success. And then clubs, of course, do the same thing. What do you think this brings to the club? Additional revenue, because more people are going to see that and say, ah, my son or daughter needs to play for this club because they're winning. And that's where this whole thing comes into play. And then we wonder why by 13 years old, kids are quitting football at an exponential rate. And it's not even just football, it's all sports. But it kind of ties back to what I was saying before, is they have not fallen in love with the game. The reason why I'm lucky enough to be in this position today is because at some point when I was a young player, football became my life, my livelihood. Like, it was basically everything that I dreamed about. Did I do some other stuff too? Sure. But I'm probably the most un-American American in the sense of I focused on football. I didn't do a dang thing else except football. It was my life. And if your player hasn't fallen in love with the game at that level, at some point they're going to quit. They're going to leave the game completely because they just don't have that love for the game yet. So just be aware of that, because that's important. And actually, you'll see later, I don't think it's this class, but another class we have where you're going to see the actual statistics about kids quitting the sports in general. Now, typical 77 and 99 matches look like the following. And this is actually kind of crazy if you really think about it. Like, even if it might even be your own kid's game. In fact, if it's impacting 98% of the country, more than likely it's impacting your kids. And the first one is, the ball is always in the air. So in the air, not on the ground, in the air, or out of bounds. So behind the goal, I didn't say in the goal, behind the goal or sidelines. That happens a lot. Parents screaming and joysticking their players. Same thing. Coaches screaming and joysticking their players. This leads to kids not having fun. And same thing, low or non-skilled players playing without the tools necessary. And this also leads to not having fun. Like, again, think about the whole reading concept I gave earlier. If children know how to read, that can make reading more fun, but you have to build the steps. Same thing here. If kids cannot dribble, pass, and receive the ball very well, they don't have the tools to be able to play the game on a basic level. And I haven't even introduced the concept about tactics yet. So if they don't have the basic tools to be successful to play, how do you think that they're going to have fun, especially when parents and coaches are screaming and or joysticking them? And you can probably guess that they're not going to have a lot of fun. Now, we move to the next piece of this. Did you know that the average 7, 8, and 9-year-old can understand the following, or I should say can only understand the following four things: themselves, a teammate, a defender, and a ball. So that means them and a friend versus an opponent, and then the ball that everybody plays with. And I think you might be able to, you know, relay that if you go watch your child's game for 98% of the country. Again, there are exceptions to the rule, because there will be 2% of the country that have more game experience, more ability to play already, that they can handle this. And I happen to have one team that can do that. That is 77, they're 2014. They're pretty good at being able to do more than just these four things, but you'll still even see elements with them struggling with these four things. Or I shouldn't say struggling, but only be able to implement those four things. So that's a key takeaway. Now, if you're not opposed to the previous ideas that you've seen in the previous slides and the conversations we've been having so far, then you'll probably really like the stuff that you're gonna see momentarily, which will be expanded on in further detail later anyways in future classes. But I'm just trying to introduce the idea to you so you can think about longer term development as you continue to go through this programming. So the Obsession Beast recommendation is the following. And if you look at this, don't even worry about the top part, but look at the number of players, small-sided games, and age group. And this is where it gets very interesting because you can see the first one, number of players, 3. Small-sided game, 2v1. And then the age groups, U9 to U11. That would be 3 age groups, by the way. U9, U10, and U11. And this says 2v1 for 3 years. You could say 2 to 3 years. All right, you look at the next one. Number of players, 5. Small-sided game, 3 versus 2. U11 to U13. That's, again, 3 age groups. U11, U12, U13. So they use one age, or we use one age, that allows you to intertwine a little bit, right? So that's why it says U11, U9 to U11, U11 to U13. Okay, so our format for development with Obsession Beast, so if you've been to any of our events or you've seen the training, is 1v1 to 5v5. And this really focuses on these four key elements: striving to achieve individual mastery, development and group concepts, give everything possible to win, and then, of course, dominate the field. And I think if you think about what it takes to be successful playing as a player, as a kid, you need to have individual skill. You need to have development in group concepts, 1v1 to 5v5. And you need to be able to give 100% effort and intensity. And hopefully, this is why you're a beast or should be a beast, you dominate the field. That's fair. Okay, now continuing on, here's 2 more formats. We're not going to go too much into it, but again, same thing. So don't really worry about the top part, but you got the number of players, small-sided game, and age groups, right? So it continues the same way. You can see the same form. But basically what you're seeing is 3 templates that we have. One was for solving a player surplus situation. This one is now possession. And then the last one, which you'll see here in a second, is creating a player surplus, which again, I will break down in a future class. I'm just trying to present the information to you so you can kind of understand what it looks like and what we're going to be talking about in the future. Okay, hopefully that makes sense. Now moving to the next point, Roberto Carlos. May or may not have heard of him. This is myself, my brother within the white shirt, Roberto Carlos in the middle, and then his nephew, who used to play for us for 3 years. And Roberto Carlos, if you don't know who he is one of the, if not the best left back, so number 3 in the world to ever played the game. And he has won, for example, the World Cup with Brazil in 2002. So I was fortunate enough to have his nephew play in my program for 3 years. And what's very interesting is we were at a tournament. It was actually a futsal tournament. He came to watch, and you know, he's super famous, so we had a bunch of people coming up to him and whatnot. Kind of besides the point, but where I'm going with this is, you know, he watched his nephew play, I believe, at least 2 games, if not 3, for sure 2. And if anybody would have the right to give feedback, talk to, coach, in the sense of what he's been able to achieve in the game, it would be him. Now, where I'm going with this is might surprise you a little bit. A guy that has played at that level, won the things that he's won, played for the biggest clubs and biggest club, arguably, in the world, in Real Madrid, the way that he behaved on the sideline was kind of surreal and might shock you. And basically how he behaved on the sideline, which I'm going to quickly explain to you, he actually sat on our team bench. So he's sitting there on the bench with us. And the entire time, he's clapping, he's waving, and he's smiling. And he did not throw out one instruction. He did not conversate anything about the game at all out loud, maybe, you know, to the people that he was sitting with, but nothing out loud to the kids while they're playing. Quiet the entire time in terms of that aspect. So, I mean, he was having signed conversations with the people that he was sitting with Whether or not he was discussing with them some ideas or whatnot, he might have been. But he wasn't, and the key thing to this is, he wasn't throwing that to the kids. He wasn't saying, for example, to his nephew, hey, you need to go back. Okay, step up. Go close this here. Okay, get the ball, play a 1-2, run forward, and shoot. Nothing. There was no words coming out of his mouth. And I think we can come to an agreement here, an agreement that if anybody would have the right to speak, it would be him. And to really emphasize his point, if he decided to talk and give some sort of points, I would have shut my mouth and be like, Roberto, please, you know, you have a better playing resume than I do. Step up, take this. But again, he's been at the complete elite level. He's done something that, I mean, we're going to put a percentage on this, less than 0.00000000000000001% of people have ever done in the world. And that's win, not even just play, win a FIFA World Cup with Brazil in 2002. So he played with like Ronaldinho, Ronaldo, Rivaldo. I mean, the list just goes on and on who he played with. And he's not opening his mouth. So why do we have coaches and parents that don't have the same resume as him constantly berating, screaming, and joysticking kids when he doesn't do it? And he would have every right to based on his resume. So I want you to think about that, okay? Now, think about your child now. What does your player want to do? And really, like I said before, why do they want to play? Now, if your kid's sitting next to you when you're watching this or they're around you, I really want you to go and basically ask them this. When your child is playing the game, what does your player want to do? Now, more than likely, they will probably say some of the following, if not all of the following, especially for this age range of 77 and 99. They're going to say things like, have fun, play with friends, score goals, show off or showboat, play different positions, aka experience, be involved, and or feel important, celebrate, and mimic their favorite players. These are some of the responses that I got. Hopefully that makes sense to you as why kids play. And these were the overwhelming majority of what the answers were. And I think that's important for people to understand that these are probably the reasons why your kids play outside of having a goal. And they might say, hey, mom, dad, I want to be a professional. So outside of the end dream of wanting to be a pro or wanting to earn a college scholarship or whatever, these are going to be the reasons more than likely that they want to play. Again, there may be an exception to the rule, but the overall theme is they want to do these types of things. Now, let's take my recommendations away. Like I said, you're going to see these basically after every single course or class. And it's just the kind of the keynotes from the piece with this. So you want to maximize your child's playing time 1v1 through 5v5. Think about Roberto Carlos. Remember to cheer and be supportive of your player. Don't coach, don't joystick. You need to find a coach who cares. This is going to continue following from the last class. And you need to be okay with your child making mistakes. Because again, think about Roberto Carlos. His nephew in those games made a lot of mistakes, I'm sure. I don't remember verbatimly, but I'm sure he made a lot of mistakes. He's not sitting there berating his nephew for making those mistakes when he probably could. I mean, of course he could. But he's not doing that. He's letting him go through the process and have fun and enjoy what's going on. And those are things that you need to be okay with too if your child's going to have the best chance of success. So that's the end of class number 2. We'll go ahead and see you guys in class number 3 here in the near future. And I hope you guys took a lot away from this and keep working on it. I'm going to continue to keep pumping out the stuff that I think you guys enjoy and learn from. And as always, keep working hard. Keep helping your kids in the way that you can. And make sure you keep learning and having that mindset to grow. See you guys in the next class. If you want more information, I have my age development curriculum that you can watch and look at for free on my YouTube channel, Kyle C. Wilson Official. All you need to do is just smash that subscribe button when you get there, and we'll see you there.